All right, Rabosei, good morning. Let's begin. So we are picking up, today's daf is Pei Vav. We are picking up 86, we are picking up the last line of Fehei Amud Beis 85b, right by the two dots. I want to thank Yehuda for giving the shir yesterday. And let's go. Ein Revi and Lomi Beis Hazon. So remember again, the Mishnah explained all the various requirements for shemen, for oil. In other words, it's not just any kind of oil, it's not just the first pressing of oil, but the olives must come from a particular type of growth. So the Mishnah goes on. So the Divrei Maskil over here is that ultimately, again, you cannot go ahead and bring olives that came from a fertilized field. But the Gemara actually transitions to a different topic. Vatanyo, ein mevien and pakton vim top of peva vim heavy pasul. Suppose if you remember again, the Mishnah spoke about the fact that you are not supposed to bring olives that are quote-unquote anpakton. But if you went ahead and you brought anpakton olives, ultimately, again, the Mishnah says that it's kosher. The Gemara says, here we have a brisa that says that it's possible. Now remember again, how did Rashi define anpakton? So in the Mishnah, Rashi says, mashalonis bashal yofa. Rashi explains it ultimately, again, as olives that are not fully ripened. Well, again, we'll get into this in just a bit more. The point the Gemara is making over here is that the Braisa contradicts the Mishnah. Whereas the Mishnah says that if you used it ultimately, again, you shouldn't, but if you did, it's kosher. The Braisa says you shouldn't use it, and if you brought it, ultimately it's possible. Why? Because ultimately, again, Rashi says over here, Sraf, actually look at Rashi Kisveyad, the Rashi on the bottom, Moel Ba'almo. It's simply a secretion. It's just simply a secretion, right? In other words, it's not called oil, it's called an olive secretion. So therefore, again, what we see over here is as follows. The Braisa says that you shouldn't use this anpakton because really it doesn't have the status of oil, which is actually quite interesting. So what the Gemara is saying over here, according to the Braisa, is not everything that comes out of an olive has the status of oil. This anpakton has the status of a secretion. So the Gemara says, Amrav Yosef lo kasha. So we'll say the problem is now, we have a contradiction. We have a contradiction, right? We have, on one hand, the Mishnah telling me that I shouldn't use anpakton, but bidi eved, if I did, it is kasher, versus the Braisa that tells me that it is possible across the board. So the Gemara says, lo kasha, harib chiyo, harib shinim barib. We'll say, it's not a contradiction, differences of opinion. One is the opinion of Reb Chiya, one is the opinion of Reb Shimon, Rabbi. Reb Chiya, Zarikle, because also Reb Chiya used to throw out the anpakton. He would not go ahead and hold on to it. Interesting, Reb Shimon, Rabbi used to hold on to it. Not only would he hold on to it, but what? He would use it as a dip for his food. So apparently he would actually go ahead and use it as olive oil. So the Gemara says, and how do you remember who held which? Listen to this, Rabosai. V'simavich ashirim mekamtsin. What's in the way to remember this is, now literally translated what this means is, sometimes wealthy people are stingy. They'll say, but actually it doesn't really mean stingy. What it means is that sometimes wealthier people are more careful with their resources than people who are not as wealthy. So also, what does this mean? Reb Shimon ben Rebbe, right? If I look at Rashi just a moment, Ashirim Mekamtsin, look at Rashi Kisveyad. It's in the bottom part of Rashi, the first wide line. Ashirim Mekamtsin, Reb Shimon Shahaya ben Nasi. Remember again, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the Nasi. His son was Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon was the ben Nasi. Va'ashir Haya, he was very wealthy, obviously. Hayakom Sova'ochal, but he was very careful with his resources. So even his son Paktin, he would not just throw away, but rather he would go ahead and use it as a dip. Whereas apparently the less wealthy, Rabbi Chiya, would be much quicker to discard. I will say, this, by the way, is just an interesting yesod in general. Where is the first time we see this concept, ultimately, again, of the wealthy being careful with their resources? Yeah. Right? So Yaakov Avinu, right? We see, again, that what happens, the pasuk says, Vayivaser Yaakov Levadu Vayivavik Yishimo. Yaakov Avinu was all alone. That's when the Sarshal Esav starts up with him. Rashi HaKadosh quotes, why was he alone? Shachach Pachim Kitanim. He went ahead and he forgot, you know, the biblical equivalent of his Tupperware, right? He forgot his Tupperware on the other side of the Ma'avar Yabok, so he goes back. So the Ma'aral, many ask, just leave it alone, you're a wealthy guy. If you got plenty of money, what are you worrying about the Tupperware? So I say, because again, sometimes when a person is blessed with wealth, they realize that they don't deserve those brachos. And that most of us don't deserve all of the brachos we get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person has an abundance of bracha, sometimes it becomes even clearer to them what a beneficiary of divine kindness they are. And so they begin to see that everything they have, even the smallest of items, is such an incredible gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you get a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it doesn't matter the value, the monetary value of that gift. You value it because it comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Like, lahavdil, if your child goes ahead and makes you something, and they bring it home, So we'll say, so again, what's the relative value of that object, that project your child made in school? Right? Let's say, let's be honest. This is a mensch here, right? Right? It's junk. It's objective junk, right? It's garbage. You're wondering to yourself, oh my gosh, like how long am I going to actually hold on to this for? Right? So again, but yet what? But at the end of the day, it's so incredibly meaningful. Why? Because it comes from someone who you love. When it comes to gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the relative value of those gifts are that's not what's important. What's ultimately important is that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me something. That sometimes, interestingly enough, you would think intuitively that the less a person has, the more they value what it is that they have. But the Gemara is pointing out, sometimes it's just the opposite. Sometimes a person who is blessed with much and realizes, you know what, I don't deserve all of these brachos. So they begin to see everything they have, from the most expensive item to the least expensive item, are all a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why you'll see, as the Gemara describes this dynamic, sometimes Ashirim Mekamtsin. It's not because the wealthy person is stingy, that's counterintuitive. It's that the wealthy person realizes that even the Anpakten, right, even this little stuff, this secretion from the olive, that's also from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore must be cherished. Good. Weiter. So the Gemara just points out over here, Shisha Chadashim Shemen Amar. So we'll say passage from Megillas Esther, right? So when talking about the beauty pageant that Achashverosh had for the women of the kingdom, so it said that they would go ahead and anoint themselves with oil, Shemen Hamar, for 6 months. My Shemen Hamar, what is the meaning of this Shemen Hamar? Rav Huna Bar Chiya Amar Satachto. It's this Satachto oil. What's Satachto? So Rashi on top, Rabbosai, says Satachto Shekorin Balsamo. Balsam oil. Balsam oil. So the Master Rabbi Yirmi Abba Abba Amar Shemen Zayis Shelo Hevi Shlish. Others say no, it's actually again olive oil from olives that did not yet reach 1/3 of their olive maturation. But we'll say that's why this Gemara is being brought down over here, because Rashi in the Mishnah explains that actually Anpakton, this oil secretion, came from oil from olives that were not fully matured. See, Siobir Rabbi Yirmi Bar Abba understands that even those secretions that come from an olive that wasn't yet 1/3 mature are also considered to be chashiv. That's why at the end of the day, the Mishnah paskins, which is how the Rama paskins as well, which this anpakdun, although lechatchila it should not be used for shemen in the Beis HaMikdash, if at the end of the day you used it, it is still kosher, because we paskin that it still has the identity of oil and not simply as a secretion. Ta'ina mirak Rebbe Yehuda Omer, anpaknun Shemen Zayis, Shloh Hevishlish, the Yehuda says, what's Anpaknun? This is this olive oil that comes from olives that have not yet reached 1/3 of their maturity. Lama Sachin also. So why do some people shmir it on themselves? Shemeshir es haseyar uma adin es habasar. So apparently, I must say, the power of this Anpaknun, or Anpaktun, different versions over here, is not as much in its value as a food item, but rather ultimately has this value in terms of it makes the skin beautiful, serves apparently as a depilatory as well, removing hair. Ein mavin min hagargarin. So what's in the Mishnah said, you cannot go ahead and bring from gargarin. Now gargarin normally means pits. In this context, what it means are very, very, very small olives. So you don't go ahead and bring ultimately from, you don't use olive oil in the Beis HaMikdash that comes as a result of what we call these olive berries, right? These very small olives that were soaked in water in order to extract the oil. So Tan Rabbanan, so the Gemara quotes a berai, so Shemen Zayis Kavush. So we'll say, this is actually interesting cases. Shemen Zayis Kavush means you took olives and you pickled them. Kavush means to pickle something. You pickle them, extracting the oil like that. Shaluk, or you boil the olives. Sharoid, or you soak the olives. Vishal. shel shmarim, or ultimately olive dregs, the shel reachra, or olives that have a foul odor, lo yavi. We'll say these items should not be used to produce olive oil for the Beis HaMikdash. Vim hevi, if you use them, pasul. Ultimately, again, any oil that comes from these type of olives will be pasul. So, by Rabbi asked the kasha, we'll say the same kasha you saw on yesterday's daf. Hekdishu mao shiyelake alav mishum balmum. Well, so listen to this. So what happens if you were makdish these flawed olives? So are you in violation for being makdish abal mum? We saw this already in yesterday's daf, right? That there's a prohibition to go ahead and be makdish a bal mum animal. So the shayla is, if you're makdish these items, which are unfit for use in the Beis HaMikdash, so do you get malchus, so to speak? Meaning, are you in violation, ultimately, for being makdish a bal mum? Kevon the apostle, ke bal mum dami. So do we say that since these olives are unfit for use, just like a blemished animal, therefore the same way you'll get malchus for being makdish a bal mum for consecrated purposes? So if you're makdish blemished olives, it's like being makdish a bal mum, and you also get malchus. Al dilma, ein bal mum el ba'meh. Or do we say no? Bal mum, Rabbi Osei, is what? Bal mum is a din in an animal. It's not a din in anything else. So therefore, maybe halacha lemaisa, again, I shouldn't get malchus for it, which the Gemara says, teku. In Achanan, we'll have to leave this one for Eliyahu Navi. He'll answer it for us. Mishnah. Shlosha zeisim. So we'll say still on the topic of olive oil. Shlosha zeisim. There are three different olive harvests. Three different times that we harvest the olives for oil purposes for the Beis HaMikdash. So the Shlosha Zesim Hein, Ubahen Shlosha Shmanim. So we'll say, interestingly enough, three times, three intervals in which we harvest the olives, and each one of those olive harvests themselves produces three different grades of oil. Now again, so to be clear, we harvest the oil at three different, we harvest the olives at three different times, and each of those harvests produce three different grades of oil. So the Gemara says, listen to this. This is really interesting. No? Yeah, good. Okay, thank you. Hazayis Harishon. Let's say, again, if you think about it, but I just want to point out, you see, we live in such a consumer age that if you want something, what do? Right? Amazon. And if you want it now, it's Amazon Prime, right? Meaning, we have no hasaga as to what actually goes in to making stuff. Because for us, again, the only shaila is, how quick can it get to me? We must say, you have to understand something. Part of the beauty of avoda is the amount of effort that goes into the back end of things. It's not just about showing up in the Beis HaMikdash. It's about taking, it's literally, again, from the beginning of the process to the Mizbeach. That first, it's incredible. That's the din in avoda Hashem also. Just like it was, I'll just give you it very quickly. That's why, again, tefillah. Tefillah, what is it? Remember in the Mishnah Maseches Brachos? Remember brachas, right? So I said, well, we're going to be back there soon. But understand, what did the Mishnah say? Chasidim harishonim, hayushoen sha'achas lefnei tefillah. You want to have a meaningful tefillah experience? Again, it was an hour of meditation beforehand. The idea is, the yisod in avodas Hashem is the same. That if you want any meaningful experience, it's not just the experience that has to be concentrated and beautiful, it's the preparation that has to be concentrated and beautiful as well. That's the take-home message of all of this. Do you realize how much time we're spending on olive oil? How much time we're spending on olive oil? Because you want to have a meaningful mincha experience? You want to have a meaningful menorah experience? Well, the shemen from the beginning has to be kadosh v'tahor. Incredible metaphor in life. You want to be successful in anything, it's not just showing up. So I'm making sure that the back end, you're preparing on the back end as well. So shlosha zeisim heim. So we'll say, ultimately, again, there are three different olive harvests. Uben shlosha, shlosha shmanim. And each of them produced three different grades of oil. Here we go. Hazayis harishon, megargaro birosh hazayis. So both say, the first olive harvest, interestingly enough, took place, it's fascinating, you didn't harvest the olives grow on a tree, right? You didn't harvest all of the olives at once. The first thing you would do is you would harvest the olives on the top of the tree. Which I'm supposed to say, actually, we're going to see is very intuitive why. Why the olives on the top of the tree? Because those are the ones that get the greatest exposure to sunlight. Therefore, those are the ones that were not mature. Ripe, thank you. Those are the ones that were ripe first. So the first harvest takes place by the top of the tree. Uba, so the Gemara says, and what would you do? So Hazayis Harishon Megargaro Barosh Hazayis, you harvest the olives on the top of the tree. Now what happens? The Kotesh, we'll say Kotesh literally means you take the olives and you pound them. Vinosin Losoch Hasal. Then you go out and you put them into a basket. Rabbi Huda Omer Silos Asal. Rabbi Huda says you wouldn't pack them in a basket, but rather what you would do is you would arrange them around the perimeter of the basket. So we'll say, here, they just have a machlokis in olive oil production, right? Did you just go out and pound it and just pack them into a basket, or did you arrange them around the side of the basket? Zerishon. But we'll say, this was the first. So we'll say, so what would happen once you put, so you pounded it, you put it into a basket, and then I will say, what would happen? What would happen? So you let nature do its work, and the olive oil would seep out of the olives, and you'd have another receptacle that ultimately would receive the olives. This is called the first. I will say this is also what we call virgin olive oil, which is the oil that comes out from the first pressing of the olives themselves. Next, what would happen next? So the Gemara says, "Zerishon Chazer Toin Bekora." I will say the next thing you would do is you would place a heavy beam on top of the olives. Rabbi Huda Omer Ba'avonim. Rabbi says you wouldn't use a beam, but rather you would use stones. Zesh Sheni. Rabbi will say this placing of the beam or of the stones was the second pressing of the olives. Okay, that's number two. Chazer V'tachon. Then Rabbi will say you would go back. You would go back and pound the olives again and put the beams upon them again. Zeshlishi. This ultimately, again, I will say, would be the third pressing. So interestingly enough, you see the first time the olives are pounded, placed into a basket, the oil that comes out of that, that's Rishon oil. Then you would go ahead and you would place something heavy upon the olives. Second time, machlokis, was it a beam, was it stones? The oil that comes out of that, that's the second pressing. And then you would go back and pound it and put the beam or stones on top of it again. That's the third pressing. Now we'll say, what's the chilik between if you are first pressing, second pressing, third pressing? Oh, harishon l'menorah. Now we'll say, the halacha is, as we're going to see, you could only use first press oil for the menorah. The menorah, what we call virgin olive oil, right? That could only be used for the menorah. Vashal menachos. Rabbi will say second and third pressings could ultimately be used for the menachos. Hasheni. Rabbi will say, what was the second harvest of the oil? End of the first wide line, pevavah mandal. What was the end of the second? What was the second? Megago barosh hagag. Rabbi will say, interestingly enough, you would go ahead and you would collect the olives on the tree that were opposite the roof line. The roof line. So this again, and the roof line, Vakotesh. So we'll see, again, you're taking off the olives sequentially, as we're going to see. You start with the olives on the top of the tree. Once you take those, you take the olives at the roof line. And again, it's the same process. Vakotesh, you pound the olives. Vinosin l'soch hasal, you put them in a basket. And then you allow the olives, just the oil, to seep into another receptacle. Rabbi Huda Masilo says, Rabbi Huda says, you wouldn't pack. You would not pack the basket, but rather, again, you would arrange the olives along the sides of the basket. Zer Rishon. Rabbi Huda says, the oil that comes from this is called the Rishon oil. To'ein Bakora. Rabbi Huda Omer Ba'avonim Zesheni. You would then take a heavy beam, or according to Rabbi Huda, rocks. You would place them on top of the olives, extract more oil. This was the Sheni. Chozer V'tachon V'ta'on. Then you would go back again and pound the olives again, or put the beam on top of the olives again. This was the shlish. We'll say same halachas. Harishon l'menorah, the oil that comes from the first pressing. This is good for the menorah. Vashar l'menachas. And the other oils are both say, in other words, pressing for what comes from the second and third rounds. That's not good for the menorah, but it is good for the menachas. Shlishi. We'll say, what about the third olive harvest? This is amazing. So we'll say, interestingly enough, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Hazayis HaShlishi, we'll say, in the Rashi Kisve Yad, the bottom part of Rashi, it's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up for the bottom. Hazayis HaShlishi, this is actually really interesting. Mashu Malaki Papam HaShlishi, so we'll say, the olives that you are gathering from the third gathering, Ein Mispashon Li'olam, we'll say, apparently, those olives never fully ripened. So apparently, why did they never fully ripen? It appears that they just never got enough sunlight. So therefore, again, they were always considered to be somewhat underdeveloped olives. Sheim ha'anafim shetachas hagag, sheim ha'chama noga b'hayim. So we'll say, interestingly enough, these were the olive branches that were underneath the roof line. So because of that, apparently they never really got sufficient sunlight, and therefore, again, they were somewhat underdeveloped. Now, again, as we're going to see, they still produce oil, but they were somewhat underdeveloped. Shlishi otno bebeis habat. So we'll say the third group of olives, you gather them, you put them in the pressing floor. Ad shi'ilakis. So we'll say these olives, you prepare them a little bit differently. What you do is you gather them up, you heap them together bebeis habat in the press. Ad shi'ilakis. And we'll say ad shi'ilakis literally means until they spoil. What it means is the way olives work is if you go, the same thing happens with grapes as well. If you gather them together, they generate heat. That heat then causes some of the liquid to seep out. The Gemara calls that spoilage. But it's not really spoilage that it becomes bad, it's just the way the Gemara calls it. Umaleo, then after they go and they begin to generate moisture, you bring them up to the rooftop. Umenagvo, you dry them off, Barosh Agag. Kotesh, then you pound them. So both said the idea over here is we're doing with these olives, because they're somewhat underdeveloped, what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to get them ready to dislodge the oil more easily. The way that happens essentially is, it's interesting, what nature didn't do, you're kind of going to artificially stimulate. So remember, these olives did not get enough heat from the sun. So essentially what you're doing is you're creating artificial heat by dumping them all together in the Beis Habad. They're going to generate this moisture, which is not really oil. That's why the Gemara calls it spoilage. Now they're ready to produce oil, but again, you want to get rid of the moisture. You take them up to the rooftop, you go ahead and you dry them off. Then after they're dried off, what do? Venos kodesh. Now you pound them. Venos in the soch asal, and you put them in the basket. Rabbi Huda omer sios asal. And Abba said, now you get into the regular process. You put them in the basket. Rabbi Huda says, the corners, sides of the basket, zeh rishon. And the oil that you produce from this batch is rishon. So Abba said, what you see from here is something very interesting, which is that what? Even from this third batch of oil, you can still produce virgin olive oil that we're going to see is good for the menorah. It just needs a little bit. This batch of olives, Abba say, needs a little extra TLC, right? This batch, it didn't get enough warmth from the sun, so what the sun didn't do, we are going to do. Toin Korah, I'm sorry, Zerishon, Toin Bekorah, Rebidun Ba'avanim Zesheni. Then Abba Osai, again, you go out after the first process, you take the beam, Rabbi Yudha says the stones, you produce the second stage of oil. Chazir Batachan Batan, then you pound them again, put the beam on them again, Zeshlishi, Harishon Lamenorah, Vashar Lamenachas. And Abba Osai, even in this case, from third batch olive oil, you could go, I should say, from third harvest olive oil, the Rishon can be used for the menorah, and the rest of the stages for the menachas. Says the Gemara, the Bayi Lahu. But the Gemara has an interesting kasha. Megargarotnan o megalgalotnan. So we'll say, how are we to read the Mishnah? Megargaro o megalgalo. Rabbi say, what's the chilik? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi in the Kisvei Yad, six lines up from the bottom. Megargarotnan, shalokit gargir kan. The gargir kan, lefisha dain enu mavushol. So we'll say, interesting enough, the Gemara is asking the following kasha. When we speak about the first olive harvest, do we say megargaro? Now megargaro means we go up to the top of the tree, we pick the ripe ones, and we leave the unripe ones. Or do we read the Mishnah megalgalo, that you leave the olives on the top of the tree until when? Until they are all ripe and ready for harvesting. How should we read the Mishnah? So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Tashma, Desanya, Sheven Zayis, Mizeso. So this is actually an interesting case. If a person says, Shemen Zayis, so Rashi says over here, Bottom Rashi again, Kilomar, Hare Alai Shemen Zayis. If a person says, I hereby take upon myself an obligation to bring Shemen Zayis to the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, what type of Shemen does he have to bring? So the Gemara says, so, Yiyah Shemen Sheiz Basha V'Yismalish Mono Bo'ot B'Zayis. So we'll say, the halacha is, he could only bring it from olives which are ready to produce oil. Olives which are sufficiently ripe to be able to actively produce oil. Mikan Amru, from here we see, Shemen Zayis Rishon Megalgalo Berosh HaZayis. So we'll say, what do you see from here? That when they harvest the initial harvest of olives, we'll say Megalgalo. So we'll say, what does Megalgalo mean? You do not go ahead and harvest the olives until when? Until all the olives on the top of the tree are ripe. Obviously, you will say all is a relative term. It doesn't mean every last olive. What it means is you don't go up to the top of the tree and pick one from here and pick one from here and pick one of the, and the other ones are underdeveloped. Rather, you wait until the overwhelming majority of the olives on the top of the tree are ripe, and then and only then do you go ahead and harvest the olives. So the Gemara says, "Mikanam ruzayis vishom megalgalo barosh hazayis." And we'll say now the Brisa pretty much repeats the Mishnah. the council of Beis Chabad. Then you go out and you bring them into this press. V'tochno berechayim. You go out and you press them ultimately again in the mill or in the press. V'nosno basalin. You go ahead and you put them ultimately in the baskets. Shemen ayotzi memenu. The oil that then comes out. Zeh hayarishon. This is called rishon oil. Next. Ta'un Bakora, you put the olives back under a heavy bean, habim, shemen ayotzi, memenu, oil that comes out from that, zehayasheni, v'chazar uparak v'tachan v'ta'an, zehayashlishi. And then Abba say, you go back, and you go ahead, and you remove them from the press, pound them again, press them again, this was shlishi. Harishon l'menorah, the first oil that came out of this was good for the menorah, v'ashar l'menachos, and the rest of the oil, ultimately again, was used for menachos, v'chein zayis, sheni, the same thing was true with the second olive harvest, the Zayish Lishi. What do you do with the third harvest? Suppose I remember again, the first two harvests are pretty much the same. The third one was different, as we saw in the Mishnah. What do you do with the third one? Ot Noba Beis Chabad. You gather all the olives together in the press. Ad Shi Elokia, until there is spoilage, which I will say means that until there's some type of olive secretion that's occurring. After that occurs, which means the olives are ripening artificially. Uma'ala L'Rosh Agag, then you bring this pile of olives to the top of the roof. Va'osa osa kimin tamra. You make it like a, literally like a date, which I will say ultimately means wide on the top and smaller on the bottom. Ad shiyazuvu meimav, until again they begin to secrete their secretions. The Konsul Beis Chabad, then you bring them back down to the press. V'tochno berechayim, you go out and you put it in the press. V'nosno besalin, then you put them back in baskets. V'shemen hayotzi menu zehayarishon, and the oil that comes out, that's the rishon. Ta'an bakora, then you put them back in the korah, the press. Shemen hayotzi menu zehayav sheni, this was the sheni. Parak chazar v'tachan v'tan zehayashlishi. Harishon the menorah, v'ashar l'menachos. The first press, the first oil is almost like you use for the menorah. The second one was for the menachos. Rabbi Huda Omer lo hayotachno berechayim ela kotcho b'machteshes. Rabbi Huda says they would not put it in a mill, but rather again, kotcho b'machteshes. Kotcho b'machteshes. For the hayotoin b'kora, ela ba'avonim. Furthermore, they would not use a beam, but rather they would use stones. For the hayonosnan b'salin, ela toch siyos ha'salin. Rabbi Huda says they would not pack them into baskets, but rather they would arrange them in the corners of the basket, on the sides of the basket. But Rabbi Huda, for our purposes, what just came out of this? What came out of this is that halacha l'maisa, the way to read the Mishnah is megalgalo. Ultimately, again, when does the first harvest take place? Only when what? Only when all of the olives on the top of the tree were ripened. We do not want you going to the top of the tree, picking a ripe olive here, a ripe olive there, a ripe olive there, and not being able to harvest the entire tree. The first harvest was not done until we were sure that one majority of the olives on the top of the tree were ripened and ready for harvest. The Gemara just raises a kashir, hagufa kashya, Kotesh money, Rabbi Hudahi, Tochasal Asan Rabban. Abba said, the Gemara just points out over here that based on the Braisa that we just read, it appears that the Mishnah poses an inherent contradiction. On one hand, the Mishnah tells you that I'm Kotesh, that I go ahead and I crush it. That reflects the view of Rabbi Huda. Yet the Mishnah also said that I put it into a basket. That seems to go according to the Rabbanan. Again, in the Braisa poses it a machlokes. Yet the Mishnah goes ahead and utilizes both of these opinions, to which the Gemara says, you're right. Hai Tana Savale Kavase Bechada Upale Gale Bechada. Well, say the point over here is that the Tana of our Mishnah kind of mixed and matched opinions. Ultimately, again, held like Rabbi Huda in one of the cases, but argued with him in Salo with the Rabbanan in another one of the cases. Good. So we'll say, so the Mishnah now then goes on to continue ultimately again with the oil. So we'll say, what we just got from the previous Mishnah was an incredible, incredible insight. A, into olive harvest, which was just quite fascinating in general, but also from a halachic perspective tells us something very interesting. Three different olive harvests, each olive harvest really produces three different grades of oil. A Rishon, a Sheni, and a Shlishi. What the Mishnah teaches me is that what? The Rishon of every single batch is kasher for what? Kasher for menorah. Sheni Shlishi, kasher for menachos. Now we're going to continue on that theme. Look at the next Mishnah. Listen to this. Harishon Sheberishon, this is really fascinating. Harishon Sheberishon, Ein Lamala Hemenu. Shabbos, obviously, the first press, what we'll call the first oil of the first harvest, was obviously the most superior olive oil. That's the Rishon Shev Rishon. First oil from the first harvest. Nothing better than that oil. That's supreme. Listen to this. Hasheni Sheberishon, Vaharishon Shebesheni Shavin. Because now we're going to get into oil relationships here. So I will say, so the second oil of the first press, I should say it differently. The second oil of the first batch, of the first harvest, that's the Sheni Sheberishon, the second oil of the first harvest, Vaharishon Shebesheni, and what? The first oil of the second harvest, Shavin. They're the same. Now we'll say we're going to see what this means in just a moment. Hashlishi Sheberishon. Similarly, we'll say the third oil of, meaning the third great oil of the first harvest. Vahasheni Shebesheni, and the second great oil of the second harvest. Vaharishon Shebeshlishi, and the first great oil of the third harvest. Shavin. So we'll say, see what this is saying. Number two of number one, number one of number two, and number one of number three, right, are all equivalent, if that was helpful. Right, are all equivalent. Hashlishi Shebesheni, I will say the third great oil, right, of the second harvest, Vasheni Shebeshlishi, and ultimately again the second oil of the third harvest, Shavin. Hashlishi Shebeshlishi in the Matimen. I will say the most inferior oil is what? Third batch of oil from the third harvest. So again, the Gemara is just creating qualitative equivalencies, although not necessarily halachic equivalencies, qualitative equivalencies between the oils. The bookends are obviously the first oil of the first harvest, Ein L'mali Menu, that is the highest, most superior oil. The most inferior oil, we'll say, was what? The third oil of the third harvest. So listen, now again, we're going to see what that means in just a moment. Here's what we know. What requires shemen zayis zach? What requires ultimately pure olive oil? Menorah. So the Mishnah just says, but menachos do not. Menachos do not. What's the right? Menachos do not? Right, because remember, what did we just learn 4 minutes ago? Right, so remember again, what did we see? It's only the menorah which requires the first pressing from each of the harvests. Menachos can be made from batches 2 and 3 from any of the particular harvests. So the Mishnah just says, Bedinu, I would have thought, Afkal menachos hayo bedin shetilim shemen zayizach. I would have thought, Rabbi Yosef, that menachos also require shemen zayizach. They also require pure olive oil. So the Gemara says, why? Why would I have thought that? Because my menorah, shein alachi latun Hashem zayisach, because Rabbi say menorah, which obviously has no consumption component, yet what? Requires pure olive oil. So I would have thought, menachos shein achila, eino din sheitenu Hashem zayisach. So Rabbi say, if something that is used for non-consumption purposes has to be pure olive oil for the menorah, right? Then I would have thought certainly something that is consumed, like the menachos, should certainly require shemen zayizach, to which the Gemara says, Talmud Lomar, zoch kasis lamor. Ve'ein zoch kasis lamenachos. Therefore, we'll say, the Gemara says, it's a pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Zoch kasis lamor. Ultimately, again, when do you need shemen zayizach? I will say only when lamaor. Lamaor means what? Maor ultimately means for the menorah, but ultimately, again, not for other things. Therefore, again, I only need zach kasis for the menorah, but I do not need zach kasis for the menachos. Good. We'll say, let's analyze this. Amud Beis Shavin. So we'll say, now the Gemara is going to question the Mishnah. The Mishnah established relationships between the various types of oils and said that what? That essentially, for example, just a simple example of this, that we'll call second batch oil from the first harvest. First harvest, second batch oil is the equivalent to what? Equivalent to what? First batch, second harvest oil. Right? So we'll say, so that's the Gemara said. So the Gemara says, really? V'ha amrit, risha l'menorah v'asha l'menachos. Now, 1 second, but that's not true. I'll say, what did we say before? We said before in the Mishnah that the halacha is that the only types of oil that could be used for the menorah are what? Are the first batch from every single harvest. So what do you mean by establishing these relationships? To which the Gemara says, you're right. They both say, the relationships that we just said in the Mishnah are only relevant vis-a-vis menachos. When it comes to menorah, say, the halacha is quite clear. Menorah requires virgin olive oil. Menorah requires first batch olive oil. Now again, you could create shemen zayis zach from the first harvest, second harvest, or third harvest. That's all fine. That's not a problem, but it always has to come from first. What are the relationships, you know, Rabbi say? The relationships are for menachos. So Rabbi say, so for example, I'll tell you what this means. What this means is, if you have in front of you, second batch oil from the first harvest, or first batch oil from the second harvest, which one do you use for menachos? Either one you want. Halachically, they're equivalent. But if you have, let's say, for example, first, you know, second batch harvest from the. Let me give a good one. Yes, if you have a different combination, then you should go ahead. Let's say, so the idea over here is that halacha lemaisa, these categories that we created are not relevant vis-a-vis menorah, because menorah ultimately, again, could only come from first batch oil. It comes from first batch oil from any of the harvests, but halacha lemaisa, the relative relationships that we created between the oils are relevant vis-a-vis the menachos. Because here's what's interesting. What the Gemara is teaching, what the Mishnah is teaching, is something very important, which is, even though menachos do not have the obligation of what? Shemen, Zayis, Zoch, they do have an obligation, in general by Karbanos, to always bring superior items for Karbanic purposes. So for example, if you have multiple oils that came from different batches, different gradations of the batches, these relationships as espoused in the Mishnah are important. Why? Because you should always bring the best quality oil for the menachos. In other words, we don't say that once you're not Shemen Zayis Zach, once you're not grade A, you're a nothing. It's not true. There are still the rest of the gradations matter, because from menachos, always trying to bring the superior oil. Good. So the Gemara says, Af kol menachos hayubidin. So this is actually a beautiful Gemara. Tan Rabbanan, Zach, ein Zach ala Naki. But say, what does Zach mean? Naki, which means pure. Means pure. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kassis. What does kassis mean, Rabbi Osai? Because remember, again, there are two ways that we describe the oil used in the menorah. Zoch and kassis. So zoch means pure, no impurities. Kassis means it's crushed, katush. Yochel yehe zoch, kassis, pasal menachos. I'm going to have Rabbi Osai. Now remember, these are both statements by the menorah. So by the menorah, Rabbi Osai, I need what? I need oil that ultimately comes. Zoch is free of impurities. Kassis, Rabbi Osai, means katush, means pounded, as opposed to the beam being used. Yochai zoch kosis pasul menachos. I'm going to tell Rabbosai that zoch kosis would not be good for menachos. Tawelomar the isaron soles balul bashemen kosis. Rabbosai, interestingly enough, we see the word kosis used by menachos also. Im kein ma tamalomar la ma'or. If that's the case, then why does the Torah goes out of his way to use the word ma'or to tell me that zoch and kassis have to be used for the light, for the menorah? Ele mipnei hachisochon. So we'll say, listen to this. Rather, it's a cost-saving measure. What does this mean? Ele maim hachisochon. Rabbi Eliezer omer ha-Torah chasa al-mamon shayis. So we'll say, listen to this. This is actually quite fascinating. What the Gemara is saying is as follows. We'll say, obviously, first batch oil is more expensive, right? Virgin olive oil is going to be more expensive than regular grade olive oil. So we'll say, listen to this. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned about was as follows. To go ahead and tell us that we have to use virgin olive oil, first grade olive oil, ultimately for the menorah, that's not such a big deal. Why? Because you don't need all that much oil for the menorah. Look at Rashi just a moment. Look at Rashi Kiseyad for just a moment, the first white line. Demincha shchichi kol yom atuva v'ika chisarn imahader basar kassis aval neros leko shemen kulehai elashlosha lugin v'chatzi b'chol yom chatzi lug l'chol ner. Also, listen to this. So the Gemara says as follows. Even though, technically speaking, can you use virgin olive oil for the menachos? Can you use it?
Sure.
Of course you can. But halacha lemaisa, there's not an obligation to do so. Why not? Bipnei achisachon. Because Rabbi Osai, the menorah only requires 3.5 lug of oil, which is not a lot of oil. So to tell you that you have to bring that amount of virgin olive oil every single day, We're fine with that. Now, we'll say there's a lot of menachos. There's a lot of menachos. Remember, again, there's the minchas chavitin of the Kohen Gadol every single day. There are also other menachos that are brought throughout the day. If halacha lamaisi is going to tell people that they have to bring virgin olive oil, ultimately, for every single mincha, that could create, now, we'll say, now, what are we concerned about? What are we concerned about, say? What we're concerned about is supply and demand. What we're concerned about is if suddenly, again, there is a spike in virgin olive oil purchasing there, we'll say, what does that do to the price? It drives it up. Therefore, in order to not go ahead and alter the markets, ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, virgin olive oil, which need a relatively small amount for a menorah, that we're makpid on every single day. But for the menachos, you don't need it. So the menachos don't need it. Rashi says, look at the next Rashi. My chisachon, kilomer, my ichbaslan bel chisachon. So you say to yourself, who cares, ultimately, again, if it's more expensive? To which the Gemara, so back to the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Elazar, HaTorah chasa al mamonon sheYisrael. The Ribbono Shel Olam is very careful with our money. Right? He's very careful with our money. He wants to make sure that ultimately, again, things do not become too expensive for Klal Yisrael. So therefore, again, Avos, and therefore, Aloch HaLamaisa, the Baruch Hu says, go ahead, we need this for day school tuition. Right? We need this for tuition. All right. But anyway, Avos says, Aloch HaLamaisa, the Givana says over here, that therefore you see, the olive oil, the virgin olive oil will be necessary ultimately again for the menorah, which is only 3.5 lugin, but ultimately when it comes to the mincha, you can use regular oil. So we'll say, now the Gemara is going to give some beautiful, beautiful agarata. So we'll say, so the pasuk says, command Klal Yisrael, they will take for you pure olive oil. Shemen zayis zoch. So we'll say, ultimately again, remember this is for the menorah. So the Gemara says, Amrav Shlomo Rachmani, Eilecha velo li. So we'll say, interesting, the Gemara dashes over here. Eilecha, the light of the menorah is for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but not for me. Don't think that I need the illumination of the menorah. Lo la'ora ani tzarech. Ultimately, again, the light of the menorah is not for me. I do not need the light. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi kisveyad. Rashi says over here, Eilecha, it's in the wider lines, about 6 lines in Eilecha. Lertzoncha ulaharos chibascha lefanai. So we'll say, amazingly enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't think, you see, we'll say, the danger in the Beis HaMikdash is thinking that what? On one hand, the Beis HaMikdash is quote-unquote the earthly abode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs that home. Just like don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs the physical trappings of the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a candelabra. There is a menorah. So why is there a menorah? Because a home needs light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't think the light is for me. The light is for you. What do you mean the light is for me? We'll say the light is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows his love for us. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu show his love for us in the Torah? Get ready for this. Shulchan b'tzafon u'menorah. This is such a beautiful Gemara. Now remember again, the Shulchan was placed in the north and the menorah in the south. I will say, now why is that relevant? Why is the Shulchan in the Beis HaMikdash? So remember again, the Shulchan, the Beis HaMikdash is set up like the palace of a king. That's how it's set up. The Kodesh HaKadosh and the Holy of Holies is the throne room. The Shulchan is mamish the dining room table. That's why you have the bread. You have the lechem upon him on the table. But we'll say, interestingly enough, the menorah and the Shulchan aren't opposite sides of the room, of the Beis HaMikdash. Now remember, if this was an earthly abode, so where do you go ahead and place your menorah? Right by your table. But yet, over here, they're placed on opposite sides. Why? To show us that as much as this Beis HaMikdash is an earthly abode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need the light. Everything in the Beis HaMikdash is for us. It's for God, but it's for us. And it's for us to show us the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. I'm Rabbi Lazar. Lo la'achila anitzarech, v'lo la'orer anitzarech. Remember again, the Shulchan is there with the Lechem HaPadim, but don't think that I, God, need to eat something. The menorah is there that illuminates such beautiful light, but don't think that I, God, need the light. So we'll say, why? So who is it all there for? Ultimately, again, we're going to see, it's there for us. Every single aspect of the Beis HaMikdash, we'll say, was there in order to show us how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. So we'll say, for example, the Gemara here is not going to say this, but the Lechem HaPanim. How does Lechem HaPanim show us how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us? How? The bread stayed fresh an entire week. Remember again, we saw the Gemara that said that when the Oli Regel came up, the Kohanim would take the Shulchan, and what they would do, what would they do? They would take it out to the populace. You remember what they would say? Re'uchi baschem lifnei hamakom. See how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. These breads were baked on Shabbos, and yet what? They're still fresh a week later. Why? Because God needs it. God needs it. God doesn't need it. It's for us. It's a physical manifestation of the Ribbono Shel Olam loves, Kadosh Baruch Hu's love for us. So we'll say, now watch this. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the light. He doesn't need the menorah. V'arayah. I asked them, the bayis, chalone shekufim atumim. So let's listen to this. When Shlomo HaMelech made the Beis HaMikdash, so he made the windows, shkufim atumim. So listen to this. Shkufim means wide. Atumim means narrow. So we'll say, what does this mean? Now the back changes this. It's shkufim mi bachutz, va'atufim mi bifnim. They were wide on the outside, narrow on the inside. And under normal circumstances, you would make windows just the opposite. You would make it narrow on the outside, wide. I mean, you can make it wide on both sides, but you can make it narrow on the outside, wide on the inside. Why? Because that way, again, it allows the inside to be flooded with light. The Beis HaMikdash was just the opposite. It was wide on the outside, narrow on the inside. Why? To show us that ultimately, again, the illumination of the Beis HaMikdash was miraculous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the light. He generates the light for us. Lo li ora ani tzarech. Michutz taparoch esaydus po oa moed. Eidosu l'chol boi olam shashchina shore b'Yisrael. Ultimately, again, on both sides, the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was always illuminated, despite the fact that there wasn't a lot of natural light, all there was what? Was the menorah. That's the Eidos, that is the sign. Kadosh Baruch Hu lit up the Beis HaMikdash. He illuminated the Beis HaMikdash for us, not for him, he doesn't need it, but for us as a physical manifestation of the love he has for us. V'im tomar, the orah ani tzarech. So maybe you'll say, no, Kadosh Baruch Hu needs the menorah, he needs the light. Isn't that beautiful this is? Remember again, all 40 years that we walked in the desert, all 40 years that we were in the desert, remember again, we traveled by whose light? By his light. There was his Eish. Elo Eidos Hu L'chol Ba'ei Olam Sha'ashchina Shora B'Yisrael. The Rabbi say the menorah was not there because HaKadosh Baruch Hu required the illumination. Rather, again, the menorah was the most incredible testament to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu resided within our midst. How does the menorah, araya, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu resided in our midst? My edusa, amirabo, ze ner ma'arovi. We'll say ultimately, again, the testimony that HaKadosh Baruch Hu resided inside our midst was the western candle. And I will say, Rashi points out over here that the Ner Ma'aravi, in fact, was the middle Ner of the menorah. Remember again, the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash had seven branches, three that kind of, well, it's a machlokis how exactly the menorah was fashioned, but it was three and three and one in the middle. The Ner Ma'aravi, Rabosai, Rashi points out, is the middle Ner. Rashi says, Ner Ma'aravi, Ner Emtsoi. It's called the Ner Ma'aravi, ultimately, again, because the lip of it extended towards the Ma'arav, extended towards the west. But say, what was unique about the Ner Ma'arav? Listen how beautiful this is. So remember again, the Ner Ma'aravi had just as much oil, right? The same amount of oil as all of the other, we call them Neros. It's not a candle, remember, it's a receptacle. It had as much oil as the other receptacles. But say, the Ner Ma'aravi was the Ner that you started with, and yet what? Uba haya mesayim. Yet Rabbi said, the next morning, when the Kohen Gadol came to the Beis HaMikdash, look at Rashi just a moment, mimena haya mesayim ha'atava baboker. The next morning, when the Kohen would come to go ahead and clean out the receptacles, the cups, so to speak, of the menorah, and to put in new oil, new wicks, yet what did he find? So we'll say, listen to this amazing, amazing miracle. The Ner Ma'aravi was still burning the next morning, even when the other Neros went out. Let's say, how could that be? They all had the same exact amount of oil, but rather, again, it was Dolek Benes. It was burning, it was a miraculous burning. The Ner Ma'aravi, Rav Osei, was burning. There's a machlokes. Was there oil left in the Ner Ma'aravi? Was it just that it burnt its oil slower than the other candles or the other receptacles? Or was it just that there was a miraculous fire burning in the Ner Ma'aravi? Either, Rav Osei, to be honest, It actually makes absolutely no difference. At the end of the day, it was a miraculous fact that the Ne'emar Ravi was always burning. It had to be extinguished, ultimately, again, by the Kohen to be relit. She goes on with the rest. So both say, ultimately, again, so the menorah, specifically the Ne'emar Ravi, was the greatest testament to the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. The menorah was not there to illuminate for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The truth is, the menorah wasn't even there just simply to illuminate for us. The godless of the menorah, Bosa, is that it was a physical manifestation of divine love. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the ner represents so many things. The ner represents Torah. The ner represents the neshama. The ner represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ner represents so many different beautiful things. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing, I am here within your midst. I am here dwelling with you. I am here by your side. The menorah's power was not in its illuminatory capacity, but its power lay in the fact that it was a constant reminder to the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our daily lives. Beautiful Mishnah. Bosai, let's just do this Mishnah. Bosai, now we've done everything regarding oil. Now we transition to wine. Where would they bring the wine from? So the Gemara says, Kaduchin va'atulin afaliyayin. The cities of Kaduchin and Atulin, these were the places which produced the greatest wine. Shnir lahem, both say secondary, more second grade wine, came from where? Beisima u'beislavan bahar. Ukfar signa babika. So Beisima and Beislavan in the mountains, Kfar signa in the valley. Kalaratzos hayiksheros. So I'll say, in reality, you could bring wine from wherever you want for the Beis HaMikdash. But the Mishnah is just telling me where they actually did bring it from. So you can bring wine from anywhere. But ultimately, again, these were the places that they actually brought wine from. In Mevi and Lo Beis HaZon, so we'll say the same thing as we saw by the Shemen. You cannot bring wine from fertilized vineyards. From fertilized vineyards, Lo Beis HaShalchin, or from irrigated vineyards. Lo Beis Mashin Ezra Beinem. We'll say, nor can you bring wine from vineyards that had seeds planted in between the rows of vines. Vim heavy kosher. But if you did so, ultimately, again, it will be kosher. Ein mevien helistion. This is actually quite fascinating. You can't bring helistion wine. What's helistion wine? If you look at Rashi, Rashi kisses at 600 from the bottom. Helistion. Liayin masuk machmas hashemesh. Sheyutolin es hanavin lashemesh. You know what this sounds like? Late harvest wine. You could not bring late harvest wine for the Beis HaMikdash. So wines from grapes that were left out to age longer in the sun. Can't bring late harvest wine. Them heavy kosher. But if you went ahead and you did, ultimately, again, it's kosher. Ein mevi in yashan. You can't bring old wine. Again, we'll discuss what this Rashi says. Yashan means mishal ishtakid. You can't bring wine from last year's crop. David Rebbe. Say yes, you can. You can't bring sweet wine for the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi points out over here, masuk is hainu me'elav. So as opposed to helistion wine, which was purposely aged, in particular, meaning the grapes were arranged in such a way that they stood out in the sun longer, masuk just means naturally sweet wine. You can't bring naturally sweet wine to the Beis HaMikdash. From smoked grapes, right, grapes which were smoked, or ultimately, v'lo mevushal. Bosa, you cannot use mevushal wine. Bosa, we're going to see all these halacha lemaisa. You can't use mevushal wine, ultimately, in the Beis HaMikdash as well. Vim heavy, and if you used any of these wines, pasul. Ultimately, again, any libations, any nesachim you brought with these wines will be pasul. V'ein mevien min hadloyos. Ela min ha'raglios. Bosa, it's actually interesting. You cannot bring vines. Bosa, deloyos means vines, Rashi points out, that were arranged on a trellis. So you cannot bring grapes from hanging vines, but rather they had to be vines ultimately again that were lying on the ground. And nor can you go ahead and bring from vineyards which were avudim, which were worked. We're going to see what these means. Velo konsin also bichatzavin. We'll say now, after you press the grapes, now the Mishnah is transitioning. Up until now, we've been speaking about what type of vineyards you could bring the grapes from. Now, once I have the grapes, and I'm pressing them into wine, what type of items, receptacles, could I put the wine into? You should not put the wine into large barrels. Rather, you should put them into small barrels. Furthermore, you don't fill up the barrel up to the top of the barrel. This is actually very interesting, because you want it to be that when you open up the barrel, the aroma of the wine wafts. Is that the word? Wafts. Right? It wafts. Right? It comes out. So in other words, we want an area that the aroma has the ability to collect. So, Einu Mavia Mipia, for the most, when taking the wine from the barrel, you never take from the top of the barrel. Mipnea Kamachin. Now, we'll say, Kamachin literally means grain granules. What it actually means over here is mold. Some amount of mold tends to rise to the top. Therefore, you don't take wine from the top of the barrel. So, where do you take it from?
Middle.
Right? Thank you. Right? Pezayin, top of Pezayin. Vlo mishula. Bosan, nor do you go out and take it from the bottom of the barrel, because of the dregs. Ella, maybe mishlisha mamtsa. Rather, you take from the middle third of the barrel. Saketzer hayabode gizba. So, what they used to do is as follows. It's interesting. So, what they would do is, how do you get the wine from the third of the barrel? You put a spigot right over there in the middle. So they would insert the spigot by the middle third of the barrel. So we'll say, this is fascinating. Again, we're going to read it today. Read it today, understand it tomorrow. So we'll say, so watch this. So what would they do? Kezad hu bodek hagiz. So what kezad hu bodek hagiz. So what kezad hu bodek hagiz. So how would they extract the wine and make sure they were getting the right wine? Hagiz bar Yosef. The Hakana Biados. So he had two guys. We'll call him, one was the spigot guy, and one was the Gizbar. The Gizbar was the person in charge of the Beis HaMikdash, temple treasurer. So what would happen? So the spigot guy is working the spigot, right? The Gizbar is sitting there with a reed, like a little stick. What would happen? So the spigot guy would open the spigot. Zarak Hagir. So we'll say, when you first bring out the wine, so some initial froth would come out. They would get out the right amount of wine. When they got out the right amount of wine, Hekish Bekana, the Gizbar would tap the spigot guy on the shoulder with the reed and tell him to turn off the spigot. And I will say, what's fascinating about this is as follows. They would not talk when extracting the wine from the barrel. Well, that's why, again, the Gizbar had the reed to tap on the guy's shoulder to tell him to shut off the spigot. Why they wouldn't talk when ultimately they were extracting the wine, you're going to have to wait till tomorrow. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, Sheyesh Bo Kimachan Pasol. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda transitioned a little bit back before. If the wine has any granules, spoilage granules in it, the wine is Pasol. Shne Emar, Temimim Yiyu Lachem Umin Chasam. Timimim yu lachem v'niskehem. So we'll say ultimately, Rabbi Yehuda ben Yosi just kind of echoing what we said before, that the wine itself has to be timimim. The wine used for the nesachim has to be timimim. Not just the din of timimos doesn't just apply for the mincha, but it also applies v'niskehem for the nesachim, for the wine libations, and therefore again halacha lemaisa, the wine must be free from any impurity. All right, so we'll stop it here for today. We'll pick up here tomorrow.